This is the Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 157, and this week we are discussing upcoming releases including Maze Runner, Tusk, and A Walk Among the Tombstones. We're going to have spoiler-free reviews of The Guest and The Gotham Pilot. The From the Outside In topic this week, typecasting. Why can't these people play other people? Latest movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson. With me today are my fellow host, Scotty Clark.
Hey.
Hey, that was a little seductive. Justin
what?
McCumber. It was.
That's how
what
I seduce
your motor running? Is that,
hey. Yeah, I just walk in the door and go, hey, and yeah. She just slaps me in the face with it. You know what I'm saying?
You pop your collar?
That's what I do. Justin McCumber.
How you doing?
Scott works better. And Brian Williams.
Hey, sexy.
I cannot get behind that at all. No.
He's like, but I can get behind you.
That's right.
You sound like a backwoods rapist. No, I can't do it.
Could you get down with a frontwoods rapist? Or are you a direction?
Yeah, I'm okay. It's really more of a sideways.
Coming from the east.
Yeah. I can get you sideways. Oh.
Yeah, we'll just move on from that. Well, anything new, exciting?
Not really.
Yeah, not really.
No. Wow. No.
Well, I'm glad that we're entertaining people on their drive home. Where do we go from here?
I'll start singing. You want me to start singing?
I do not.
We will get Buffy musical all up in this bitch.
It has been an extended amount of time.
Oh. Heavy sigh. You know, some week we should probably come on here and just have like a background track that runs throughout the episode with just randomly song lyrics.
So we can get sued by like 40 different
It'll be
bands.
Like karaoke where they just like the music pops up and then it just goes away. And then we just start singing. And all music a ho. They do it for TV shows. Why haven't
we should
done
pair
it?
That with a drunk cast? That way we're all just drunk singing.
No, that sounds horrible. It's horribly fun.
That sounds like a really bad karaoke party.
Yeah.
And let me go ahead and request... I got friends in low places.
This is the guy from Texas.
Because I will sing the shit out of that when I am drunk.
I'm going to do Blaze of Glory by John Bon Jovi. I could do that. Ooh. Yeah. Oh, whoa, Brian.
Brian, what's your drunk song?
Probably, let's go with Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf.
It's like an 8-minute song. I used to DJ, and that was like the... song you put on when you had to go to the bathroom because it's like eight minutes long.
Yeah, it's like 14 minutes long or something. It's crazy.
That is like one of the longest songs ever. Well, how about movie news? You know, people probably want to hear about movies a little bit.
Let's talk about music some more.
I'm sure you probably could. You guys, you and Justin, and just sit here and sing all night long. Sylvester Stallone is going to direct and star as John Rambo one more time in Rambo : Last Blood. I want to make sure you guys knew there was a colon there. So he's going to play John Rambo again. I'm happy that I get to do his voice one more time. But
oh, God, I even think about that.
Is anybody else happy about him returning to this?
Well, you weren't a big fan of the last one, right?
I liked the last one. It was a good ending. It was a good bookend.
Like it would have been a good finale, too.
I thought it was a perfect finale. Yep, he shows up at his parents' house, and that's the end of the movie. I thought it was perfect.
The problem was that movie didn't have that... after colon phrase.
That's true. It just said Rambo. And he's like, well, I got to have a colon.
Because he's old.
There you go. Anybody else? I mean, you guys are Rambo fans. Do you want to see this?
I'm not a Rambo fan. I mean, it was fine, but I'm certainly not begging for a sequel.
I liked First Blood. They kind of just went downhill for me after that. Granted,
did you see the last one? The last one was really good.
Yeah.
I liked it. What about you, Brian? You like action, sweaty men.
Well, since you put it like that, I don't need one. I totally agree with you. I like the last one, and it was one of those surprise movies that was a lot better than what I expected it to be. The way it ended was fine, and I'm done with it. I've kind of, you know, got a spot for it in my little vault, and it just kind of sits there, and I'm fine with it. I don't need any more.
I hate to say it. I kind of feel the same way. Just let it. And I love Stallone, obviously.
Obviously.
But man, he seems like he just can't let his past die at this point. We'll see how it turns out. Maybe he's got a great idea. I don't know. Justin, you just interviewed Coherence director, correct?
Yeah, James Ward Ward Burkett. It was a really nice interview. It was spoiler-free. I wish it could have been longer, but there's a lot to be said for keeping an interview kind of short. That way it limits my rambling, which I have been known to ramble on occasion.
What?
Yeah.
This is new to sadly. Me.
Say it ain't so.
This is new.
It is so. But it was a good conversation, and he is incredibly easy and nice to talk to. So I hope everybody out there has listened to it. And if you haven't, give it a chance and then give the movie a chance, because everybody so far who has taken my advice and watched it has come back with raving reviews. So hopefully your mileage won't differ from that, because it is very good.
I can't help but notice that you had zero problem pronouncing a white guy's name.
You want to go there? Yeah. Do we want to bring all that up? No.
No, we'll bring it up at the end. Poor Justin actually got attacked like I normally do. I kind of feel good because you got attacked for your name pronunciation, and that's like my spot. How does it feel to be me?
To be you? Disgusting. It's like I feel like I need to shower constantly.
I don't blame you. Did you guys hear other people returning to roles they should long have let go? Orlando Bloom is hinting that he might return to Pirates 5, which some people already said we don't necessarily need a Pirates 5. Okay, Justin, this is a property I know you do like. Do you want to see Orlando Bloom come back as Will Turner?
I actually do, because at the end of the franchise, or the trilogy, he became the captain of the Flying Dutchman, which meant that he could only come back, what was it, like once every 10 years, get on land again. So, you know, by the time Pirates 5 comes out, I mean, I don't know how many years it's been since the third one came out, but shit, it's a movie. If it picked his character back up and maybe somehow dealt with the Flying Dutchman and either getting him off of it or getting rid of the boat entirely, I would be much more interested in seeing that than I was in seeing the mermaids and Blackbeard in the fourth film, which I felt really let the franchise down, because I did enjoy all of the original three.
I agree with you 100%. Who knew? It happens.
Who the fuck knew?
Who knew? As long as there's no dolphins.
There's definitely a glitch in the Matrix here.
As long as there's no dolphins in the water, we'll agree on this one. Will Turner, for me, I hated that ending. Absolutely hated it. Because I thought it was just... It's almost like we went along with that character for three movies, and then you just totally screwed us. You tried to make it seem like it's a heroic choice and everything, but it just, for me, felt cheap and lazy and a little too dark for that franchise. So I would like to see that rectified, and if that's how they do it, I'm fine with it. That said, I don't need them to be like a huge part of it. I want to thank our Stitcher listeners real quick, because we are now number 68 in entertainment on Stitcher.
Nice.
That's pretty sweet.
Moving on up
to the east side,
to the deluxe apartment in the sky.
Moving on up.
Wheezy! I miss that little guy. He's so cute. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate it. Keep sharing the show and letting people know. And let's go to movie news. Jason Blumhouse is taking another chance on changing up how films are released. Now, he's the guy who is responsible for Paranormal Activity and a lot of micro-budgeted, found footage-type movies. He's going to try to change things up with his new venture called BH Tilt. What is this, Justin?
Well, BH Tilt is an idea that he came up with for new filmmakers to be able to create their films on a really small budget and have a way to distribute their movies across a variety of distribution channels, whether it's the theater, whether it's Netflix or Hulu or DirecTV, could be iTunes, Amazon. There's all sorts of ways that movies can get out there, and he wants to try and create a way for filmmakers who are the young upcomers to be able to make their movies for a very small budget and get them out there. Because he has discovered that when you make films on a small budget and release them through the appropriate channels, then you can definitely make a return on that. So that's what he's trying to do. The official pitch that he's given is that it's a 10-year first look production agreement with Universal Pictures, which has a high ratio of micro-budget genre movies that are going to be well suited that may not be suited for wide theatrical releases, but through other channels, they can find their audience with perhaps a day and date release with the movie, the theatrical release. I think it's interesting, and I would love to see more filmmakers try to get their dreams, their stories out there, but not have to depend on a theatrical release. And with the, as we have talked about again and again, the increased usage of streaming services or even satellite services. I know DirecTV, they quite often will get these movies. Like I watched Life After Beth a couple of weeks ago, which is in theaters maybe or soon to be or maybe was, but I saw it there. I enjoyed watching it. So there's a lot of ways to get your movies out there. He's made a lot of money, and he's wanting to help others find their own way out there. So I think it's all cool.
And we do talk about this very often, about how independent films specifically are changing and how they're distributed. This, to me, sounds like a filmmaker or producer who's trying to take that next step and realize that, you know, all of these movies that come out, they don't ever make their money when you release them theatrically, because there's too many other movies to compete against, unless it's a really something that sparks talk,
right?
You know, gets people talking, word of mouth. That's how you sell. This seems like another option. I was just looking at how Snowpiercer did, which it did around 11 or 12 million. I'm not saying to bring it up. We brought it up enough, but it made it like 11 or 12 million on video on demand and digital release. Now, if I realize that big budget movies are not going to make a lot of money on demand at this point, but micro-budgeted, if it costs $100,000 and it made $3 or $4 million, that's a huge profit for those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have filmmakers like Coherence and other independent films. Creep is one of them. I think, is that one that he's doing this with, Creep?
That's going to be one of their initial movies through this distribution, yes.
Yeah, that's one of the movies they had at South by Southwest. And it's a quality film. It looks like a real movie, so it's not like you're getting a rip off. And if it goes there and it makes its money, makes a profit, they can make another one. It seems like a smart way to go. I think.
Well, first off, I would be careful saying real movie.
Well, because a lot, I think there's still that stigma that if it goes to video on demand or it goes direct to DVD or something, there's that stigma that it must be a crappy movie.
Right.
It must not be a real movie.
I agree. And to me, what this sounds like is that it's giving an avenue for those that don't have the money behind it. And which is sad, because I think there's honestly a lot of talent out there that we'll never even hear of just because it's so hard to get into the business and you don't have the money behind you. So on one hand, I like it. Where I get a little nervous about the idea is we could get this oversaturation of stuff. Like as an example, you ever go and just scroll through the apps on your phone and how there's good stuff on there, but sometimes you gotta like just filter through all of that. And if this is successful, we're going to see lots and lots more movies.
It's going to be harder to find the better
quality
ones. It's going
to be hard to find the hidden gems, because it's going to be flooded with so much. Oh, anybody with a, you know, with a camera can put something together and have an audience.
Well, but what you have to hope for is that even though this is going to open the door for more filmmakers, there still is going to be a gatekeeper in place. There's not going to be just a free-for-all that anybody who can make a movie can get it up on iTunes. It's still going to have to go through a distributor who's going to view that film, and if they think it's crap or they don't think they can make any money off of it, they're not going to release it or take it on. So hopefully you're still going to have somebody filtering it a little bit. I mean, that's not to say that there's not already a ton of crappy movies that you can find on Netflix or iTunes, but maybe not to the level that you're fearing. At least I'm hoping not.
Right.
And I got a question. Brian, this is specifically for you.
It's what?
Brian. This is specifically for Brian.
Okay. I didn't hear that earlier.
Because I was going all Atlantic on you here.
Because you live in a more rural area. So it's harder for you to get to a theater, right? There's not many close by. And the ones that do, you know, you're going to get only the big movies. So for you, does something like this appeal to you because you'll have a better shot at seeing quality movies that you would normally have to wait and wait and wait for?
It's a good question. In a way it does, but I don't want it all, I guess, all thrown out there. You know, it just kind of seems like there's going to be so many venues for a lot of these lower budget new director movies are not good. There are plenty of good ones. I realize that. But for everyone that's good, there's probably 15 to 20 that are very bad.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I just, you know, I don't want to waste my money on something like that. I'd rather waste my Netflix time and, you know,
watching
find
the
it on
entire
Netflix
series.
Or Amazon or something.
Okay. I was just seeing someone like where you live, if that would be a benefit or not. But I see what you're saying. Yeah, kind of the same concern Scott has. Same concern.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, plans are going forward with a 23 Jump Street. I don't know anybody that's really surprised by this. But they originally, Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum said they weren't going to do another one. Turns out, they lies. They're going forward with a 23 Jump Street. Are you worried that they're running out of juice on this, Scott, or since you were actually worried about the last one?
I was. I had if you'd asked me this question after the 21 Jump Street came out, I would have been like, there's no way. I went into 22 Jump Street not expecting to have a good time, and I laughed my ass off in that movie on more than one occasion. It was really, really good. I'm officially looking forward to 23, and if the end of that movie tells us anything, the next one's going to take place in medical school, so...
Well, actually, by the end, there's about 45 different options they could go with.
No, but 23 was the medical school one.
Do you want it in medical school?
I'm just saying. That's
Justin, Brian, you guys want another Jump Street?
Well, how many churches does Jump Street have?
There's a lot of them. They just keep putting
them
across
the street. You're going to have to move
again. It's going to be next door to 21 this time, if you go by.
Yeah, it'll be right across the street again, yeah. Do you want another one? Do you care?
Yeah, why not? I haven't seen 22, but I have no doubt it's hysterical. You guys gave a great review. So if they can keep doing it and keep pumping out the funny, I'm more than happy for them to continue.
For me, the bigger draw on that is seeing Channing Tatum in a comedic role. Because I'm kind of tired of Jonah Hill, but the two of them together do work really well together. I think Brian would agree with me on that, actually. But I think Tatum is the bigger draw.
I like the first two. I like them. I don't need a third one. I don't mean to be a negative Nancy here, but yeah, I've had my fun with it, and I don't want a watered down version. If it's done and it's fresh, great. But I'm not clamoring for it. I like them. I don't have anything against them. I just don't feel that need for a third one.
I'm with Brian. I liked the last one, but I was really, by the time it ended, I was ready for it to end. And I really wasn't interested in another one. I love Channing Tatum, but Jonah Hill, I just don't find him funny. I really don't. I think he probably was about 2 years ago and 3 years ago. Something. I'm telling you, that's the way. I like Fat Jonah better, but he's not
Danny McBride, but he has his moments.
Oh, you had to go there.
I did.
Wow. So he's better than dog shit, well, or not as good as dog shit. I'm not really sure I'd take that. I don't know. Put Jonah Hill and Danny McBride in the same movie, and just they can make sequels to that forever because I'll know to avoid it. That would really be a great plan. And just have Channing Tatum be the funny cop because he's great at playing an idiot.
I don't know if he would work as well by himself, though.
I think he owned that movie. He made that movie work because there are many – every time it went to Jonah Hill, I was bored as hell.
When it was Jonah Hill by himself, you mean?
Yep, bored as hell. Absolutely bored.
But when the two of them together...
Then it's funny, but Tatum was funny. Mm-hmm. Anytime Tatum was doing a scene with like one of the other guys or anything with Wyatt Russell, when they were doing scenes and stuff, funny. Because Channing Tatum is charismatic and funny and talented. Then you got Jonah Hill, who's just Jonah Hill. That's it. I don't really think he acts anymore. He just shows up.
He was pretty good in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was. I think he's a good dramatic actor. I don't find him funny is what I'm saying. Paramount has already announced two sequels for a movie that hasn't even come out yet. And that's for Terminator Genisys, spelled horribly incorrect. And that's going to come out 2017 and 2018 before the first movie has even come out yet. They've already announced these. Now, Brian, is that a little premature for you, or are you just excited you got a whole new trilogy to look forward to?
Look, you slap the name Terminator on anything, it's going to make money.
Yep.
And they realize that, plain and simple. So it appears they're probably going to give it the Lord of the Rings type treatment where they just crank them out and just start from whenever they started and just keep cranking them out until they're done making this trilogy. And that tells me they've got a plan. They know where they want to start. They know where they want to finish. And if it's a big enough scope, if it's a kind of a broad enough story and it's interesting, great. You know, if it decides to kind of do like the Matrix and just get worse as it goes, then, you know, I feel sorry for it.
I like that. Did Justin catch that? Everybody get really quiet. It's
like, yeah, I know.
I'm not taking that bait.
Brian, can you repeat that part about the Matrix again?
Yeah, you mean the one about it getting like the comparison of Terminator possibly getting worse, yeah. Much like the Matrix franchise.
Mm. Ow.
Where especially the second one. Oh my God.
Stings.
Well, given that the second Terminator was the best of them all and the second Matrix was the best of them all, they are kind of comparable. So thank you.
Well,
yes.
No, because I was making a comparison of.
No, you made your comparison and it's wrong. I'm right. And I'm not taking your bait again.
To bring it back on track, I will agree with Brian and say that, yeah, the name Terminator is going to sell. Plus, you put in the power of the actors that are involved in it. Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I mean, that alone is going to get people to go see her.
I disagree with that. I don't think she's going to sell any tickets.
Oh, I think she will.
I disagree with you.
And not to mention the guy from Doctor Who.
Who's the guy from Doctor Who?
Guy that played The Last Doctor? I don't even watch the show now.
Matt Smith?
Mm-hmm.
Is he in it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in it. I don't get the appeal for this guy.
I don't watch Doctor Who.
I don't either.
No, I don't. One, I don't watch Doctor Who. But I've seen him in interviews and other shows, and he bugs the shit out of me personally. But
tell us how you really feel. Does it make you feel like a Matrix sequel?
It kind of makes me feel like I'm about midway through the third one.
Third one ain't my favorite.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know. I'm of the mindset that after I sat through Terminator, was it Salvation? Is what it's called? Mm-hmm. Where they just said John Connor 45 times. I hated that movie. I didn't find it. The only thing I liked about it was, what's the lead actor's name? It was in Clash of the Titans, Wrath of the Titans, and Sam Worthington.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he did a very good job playing a robot. Turns out that's what he does. But didn't like Christian Bale in that movie. The movie was just not good. And so for me, I need to see how this one is going before I'm going to be sold on a trilogy. Just like I would for any. I just don't have the faith in the material at this point.
Yeah, but the point is we're all going to see it.
I'm going to see one of them. That doesn't mean I'm going to see all three.
Bull crap.
I won't see all three. Dude, I would not be seeing. If they made Terminator Salvation Part 2, I would not go to the theater and see it. I promise you, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I just by the
loathe
name.
That movie.
Well, they know that nobody would. That's why they're starting this crap.
Oh. Oh no, there's a pretty strong cult following for Terminator, man. My brother-in-law is, he will punch somebody if you start bad mouthing Terminator, which means he's probably going to hit me the next time he sees me.
Oh Jesus! Somebody take video.
Make it like the Aaron Bucket challenge.
World star. Wow.
Let's go to Minority Report. A lot of people love Minority Report. That was the Tom Cruise movie. It's going to be a TV series, and it is officially going to the pilot stage. And now we have a few details of what the series is going to be like. Justin, I know you're excited.
Yeah, they said that the television show is going to take place 10 years after the movie ended, with the pre-crime unit being dismantled. And it's going to focus on a former precog who's having trouble adjusting to normal life, which I would assume you'd have some difficulties. And the precog ends up meeting a detective who's also haunted by her past, with the pair possibly teaming up to find new meaning in their lives. So there you go. It's going to take place after the movie. It's not going to retell, it's not going to be a retelling of the film. And yeah, there. I think it sounds like an interesting idea. And I am really glad that they're not going to be redoing the film, but taking it in a different direction. So we're going to get a story we hadn't seen before, hopefully.
And Spielberg's behind this, right?
Mm-hmm. Ms. Amblin Entertainment's producing it.
That makes me excited.
That makes me excited. The story-wise, it bums me out, man. Like, it seems like you took what was really interesting about Minority Report and just pulling it all out of there.
What do you mean?
What was cool about Minority Report to me was outside of like it being a believable future with all the technology and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. was the pre-crime, was them was the idea of solving a crime before it happened. And
the person who's the precog will still have their ability. It's from the way they're wording it. So they're still going to have that ability to see crimes before they happen. And since they're teaming up with a detective, I think you're still going to be getting that aspect of Minority Report, that trying to solve things before they happen.
So it won't be as organized as it was in the film?
It doesn't look like it. It looks a little bit – it'll probably be more of, you know, just these two doing it on their own as opposed to a whole pre-crime unit.
Man, that doesn't sound as interesting to me.
I think you need to do that though. I really
do.
Yeah,
I think you do too, because it makes it more interesting to me anyway.
Because if they can solve it right away, I mean, the show is 5 minutes long. Hey, we just caught a murderer again. Let's go watch this guy that looks like Tom Cruise get waffles. That doesn't sound nearly as
riveting. Blue waffles?
Oh,
what did you say?
Oh, man.
Do not, listeners, do not Google that.
What did he say?
Just told them to practically.
No,
I didn't even hear him. I couldn't hear you, Brian. So somebody, I'm sure, will fill me in on this horribleness.
No, don't.
Oh, no, really don't.
Oh, before we move on, and some of our members can feel free to take a pause. We did lose another celebrity. I mean, it's, man, they are dropping like flies. Joan Rivers passed away from complications of a surgery. Some people were not fans of her. Some people were. No matter what you thought of her, she was a pioneer for female comedians. Many, many, many female comedians looked up to her as somebody who led the way to comedy, to being brash and sounding just like a man, so to speak. So I just want to say thoughts and prayers, you know, to her family and friends. And if you didn't like her, I understand, but you still can't deny that she did have an impact on how female comedians are perceived in this world today. And that deserves respect.
I personally wasn't a huge fan of her comedy, but I've learned a lot about her over the past, since it happened. Mm-hmm. And just what I really appreciate about her early career, like you said, the fact that she was a female comedian in a predominantly male world there. She had an insane work ethic that I never knew about. Her tenacity, like she would – I heard a story about how she had a – obviously before we had phones with calendars, she had a day planner. Mm-hmm. And if she had like 2 hours in a day that wasn't filled up with something, she would freak out and like have to find something to do to fill up those 2 hours, something productive obviously. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that we don't have today. If I have an extra 2 hours, I'm like, thank God, instead of like looking for more to do. So I really appreciate that aspect.
She's still working. And I've seen so many people say, well, she hasn't been relevant for like a decade or so. I'm like, man, you need to go talk to people that watch E! And those kind of shows, because she's hugely relevant.
Yeah, I was going to say absolutely. And even to Scott's point, I watched a show. It was a documentary thing on HBO where they just followed her around for a year. And she would do a comedy show in some bar. She's done at midnight or 2 a.m, whatever the case is. And, you know, she's going back to the hotel. She's signing autograph stuff, and then she'll go to the hotel. And you see like the next, week, there's just like Scott said, there was no time. She's constantly running, even at her late 70s, early 80s. I forgot how old she was when she died, but
81.
She was. Yeah. So, but I mean, even up to the, till the time that she died, I mean, her work ethic was phenomenal, and she was constantly doing shows, doing events, meeting with people, TV shows, whatever, voice acting. She was always doing something.
And she was still sharp. My wife watches Fashion Police religiously, and I don't watch it, but I would pass through the room and it'd be on or something. The woman is still sharp. She was still sharp. She would nail jokes like nobody's business, and she would go for it. I mean, there are very few comedians I know that would take a chance on certain kinds of humor. Not always just insulting humor. I mean, just go for the joke, very inappropriate, offensive and whatnot. And she just goes, it's like she didn't even care. And she just went for it. I respect that.
And I think Johnny Carson wanted her to take over his show whenever he retired.
Yeah, he did. It was one of the ones that they actually dated for some time until I think she got banned or something for.
Yeah, she actually, it was about the early days of, I think, of Fox. They offered her her own show, which just historically bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And his feelings were hurt so bad that she took her own show, that he basically blacklisted her.
Yep. He was very offended.
And that documentary you were mentioning, Brian, is available on Netflix streaming, by the way.
What is it?
It's called Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work.
Yep, so. That's it.
All right. Well, RIP, Joan. Don't forget to listen to our 2014 Summer Movie Awards. That's out. And I think it was episode 155. And last week's episode was Fall TV. So go check that out. We've had a lot of really cool episodes the last couple of weeks, which is funny because there's nothing in theaters right now. There's like nothing. I mean, The Identical's out, but nobody saw it. Because you guys are like, what's The Identical? We didn't even talk about it. That's why.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. All right, first up is the ageless Jennifer Lopez in The Boy Next Door, about a newly divorcee that has a torrid affair with a new kid on the block, and I literally mean kid. After she regrets her mistake, though, he gets all possessive, obsessive, and bad punny on everybody. Now, Aaron, nobody loves your mama's cookies more than me, so are you ready for another Fatal Attraction-esque movie?
I watch this trailer, because the first half of it, I thought, is this going to be some ridiculous love story or something? And it turns out to be like a MILF thriller. Yeah. Absolutely. And I got to tell you, and people can hate on me on the one. I love Jennifer Lopez. I think she's gorgeous. I don't think she's a great actress. I just think she's gorgeous. And I'm watching, the whole time I'm watching this, my brain is thinking like this kid. And I'm like, man, wouldn't that be great? And then he actually sleeps with her in the trailer. And I was shocked. I never thought that was going to happen. I thought it would be one of those things. It's forbidden love. And then he turns into a psycho. I want to see it. I know it's going to be bargain basement B-movie cheesy. I don't care. It's a nice little twist on a tired premise, and I want to see it.
Is that the power of the J-Lo butt?
Oh, that
butt. It drives you crazy?
It's pretty fantastic. Yep.
It is a force to be reckoned with.
It's like a Sharknado.
Do you feel like they showed a little too much, though?
I'll be honest. I thought about that, and if they wouldn't have shown me what was going to happen, there's no way I would be interested in seeing this movie. If I thought it was just a love story, I definitely wouldn't want to see it because it looked kind of cheesy. And if I thought it was just him being crazy and didn't see the part where she actually let him into her bed, that I wouldn't want to see either. Knowing that she allowed herself to be charmed by this boy and that her whole life is being destroyed because of that, that sounds like an interesting film. I think it sounds very cool. And they're going to try to make her a sympathetic character, and it's going to be hard, man, that situation. Not for me, but for some people.
You think
so you enjoy seeing women's lives being just trashed and just totally ruined. Okay. Right, man. Whatever floats your boat there.
No, I'm speaking for
all you women
totally
can send your emails and complaints to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Stop comparing me to Roger.
Hey, finally the woman's the creep and not the guy.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. Finally the woman's the creep.
What are you talking about? Finally the woman. That's all that's in the news is like at least twice a year.
These movies, it's always like
twice a year.
It's always like the guy that does the lecherous thing. And this is considered a lecherous thing. Now, from all of our perspectives, our pathetic male expectations are, we would love to be in this kid's shoes, because when we were 16 or 18 or however old this kid is, we would be like, score! And so it's kind of like reliving that youth fantasy, except for now we got a little twist on it. I don't know. I just want to see
one teacher I wished. Oh, I wish she had seduced me.
See? Everybody's got that one.
Miss Green.
She's not listening.
Okay, so before we get a little too weird, The Boy Next Door opens January 23rd of next year. And a couple of months before that one comes out, Horrible Bosses 2 hits the big screen on November 26th. The trio, fed up with having bosses, they start a company for themselves. But when a shady businessman swindles them and leaves them with no legal recourse, they take matters into their own hands by kidnapping his son for a hefty ransom. Scott's our resident kidnapper of the group, so I'll pose it to you. What'd you think of the trailer for the sequel?
Is it Kidnapper or Kidnaper?
Naper.
Kidnaper? Man, Horrible Bosses was one of those movies that was funny, but I never in a million years thought I'd want a sequel to, and now I can't wait to see this film. I haven't laughed so hard in a trailer in a long time, at least a trailer I saw, which I gather is not a for all audiences trailer, the one I saw.
No, that is the normal theatrical trailer.
I was going to wonder, because there wasn't like the red band or whatever at the beginning of it, and there was some
language.
There was some language in there.
Puss. In context.
I seriously think that Jason Sudeikis might be my favorite comedic actor working right now.
He's so funny.
He is so funny. And Charlie Day is like not quite annoying yet. You know what I mean? Like in lots of doses he could be, but they use him just the right amount, at least in this trailer. I obviously haven't seen the movie, but it looks so funny. I cannot wait to see this movie. And they bring back so many of the characters. Jennifer Aniston, the whole scene with her. How old is she got to get before, like...
Before you don't want to date her? Yeah.
Because she's, like, over 50, isn't she?
No, she's, like, 45 or something. She's not over
50. Yeah, Scott, she's actually 67.
Somebody look up how old she really is. But despite that, she is funny. She's incredibly attractive. She can't be on my TV screen often enough. That's for dang sure. But between Sudeikis and Bateman, I think you've got an incredible pair of comedians who just really know how to deliver a joke, even some of the most foul jokes, and make it hysterical. I wasn't sure if this movie was one I would be interested in, but I hope that if Sudeikis and them brought their game, it would be worth it. And that from this trailer, it definitely looks worth it. And they even brought back who was the Jamie assassin
Fox.
They thought they were talking to
Jamie
in the first
Fox?
One? Yeah, Jamie Foxx's character. That's a character I didn't think that would come back. But
I didn't either.
It's funny. It looks hysterical. I can't wait to see it. And Chris Pine.
Yeah.
He's funny too. Yeah. It looks good.
She's 45, like I said. So there you go.
Very good.
45 and Scott's still infatuated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because usually he's, you know.
Wow.
Well, she's thin too, because the thinner's the winner.
Yeah, but she's not like a toothpick like he normally likes. Because you know he's not interested in Jennifer Lopez. He's like,
Jennifer Lopez, she's carrying around too much fat.
Yeah, she's like two people. She's so chubby.
Yeah, it's exactly what I said.
Just dump her out on the curb.
Yes. Brian, you can wrap it up.
Was it Brian? Who was it that said, like, offer her some chips or something, and if she grabs for it, just kick her out? It's like a test. The Scott test.
Hold a bag of open Doritos in front of her.
If she takes one, she's out.
She's done. We're done. Get out.
Oh, man. Yeah, you guys can watch these trailers and those from recent episodes at thehollywoodoutsider.com. If there's anything you want us to talk about, or you got anything you want to get off your chest, you can tweet us at @H_Outsider. Go into facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Like us on Facebook. Join the group. Have some fun. And you can also email us at feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com.
All right, folks, we've got four movies we're going to be talking about, all of them opening up on September 19th, but there is one that's opening up 2 days earlier called The Guest, and Aaron will be discussing this one in his review, so we're going to leave this one alone. We're going to start with This Is Where I Leave You. This one looks incredibly funny. I personally can't wait to see it. It's directed by Sean Levy, and it's about when their father passes away.
Their former father.
Yeah.
Wow. They're late. Father.
Yeah, their late father. Four grown siblings are forced to return to their childhood home and live under the same roof together for a week, along with their oversharing mother and an assortment of spouses, exes, and might-have-beens. And here's the cast on this. And Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Jane Fonda, Adam Driver, Rose Byrne, Corey Stoll, Catherine Hahn. I mean, Timothy Oliphant, Dax Shepard, who I know ain't everybody's favorite around here. It's got a fantastic cast. It looks hysterical. Scotty, is this one you could be at all interested in?
Oh, yeah. I said it back when we first talked about this trailer. You had me at Jason Bateman, but then all those other actors afterwards. And the trailer gets consistently funnier as you go through it. And you're really not expecting it. And It's got that Jason Bateman does the in this film, he does the humor that he did in Arrested Development, where he acts like he's the better person than everybody else, but he's really just another family member. Yeah. And I love that. So I'm totally on board. Can't wait to see it.
I'm so glad we're in the time of year where these kind of movies come out. Mm-hmm. I know you guys love big budget special effects and all that, and I do too. I like them too.
Yeah, but don't say that like you ain't one of us.
No, I'm one of them, but I love us. Come on now. Come on. Obviously, I'm not part of the group. You guys have your own little clique, and I'm barely invited.
What do you mean,
invited.
You people?
Yeah. I like this time of year, you get movies like this that are more like small relationship dramas, and this is a very like, kind of like The Big Chill and that type of film. I love these kind of movies, and they don't come around very often, and you get that cast. Even if the script is not great with the cast, it should be brought up to a higher level. I can't wait to see it.
All right. Next movie up is Tusk. This one's written and directed by Kevin Smith, and it stars Michael Parks, Justin Long, Haley Joel Osment. Apparently, it's got a small part in it with Johnny Depp's actually in it, and Ralph Garman. When podcaster Wallace Brighton goes missing in the backwoods of Manitoba while interviewing a mysterious seafarer named Howard Howe, his best friend Teddy and girlfriend Allison team up with an ex-cop to look for him. This is a weird one. I can't wait to see it, but I am a professed Kevin Smith fanboy. Aaron, how interested are you in seeing this?
Very interested, very hesitant. It's hard to really explain why, but it has a lot to do with the last 5 or 10 years of Smith's career. I love his writing. I think he writes better than just about any comedic writer out there. He can write dialogue that will make you just, you know, lose your shit. But the last several years, I don't think he's been as strong. He had a much better showing with Red State. I thought Red State was a very good movie. I don't think it was quite like a great career saver or anything, but it was definitely showing, okay, he's maturing as a filmmaker. He's finally becoming a director as opposed to just a writer. Because I've always thought his movies were good and funny, but it was never because he knew how to swing a camera around. It was always because he knew how to write and his actors believed in him and the material. Tusk, he's got to be, to make this material work, he has to be a good director. The writing alone in a movie this absurd is not going to save him. It's kind of like a Donnie Darko. If you don't have someone that can actually direct the film and really, really bring the imagery to light, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. And his name will help him a lot with some critics, and it'll help him a lot with some filmgoers who are just big fans. They're going to like it because Kevin Smith's name's on it. You know, I'm not in that camp. I just because I love Kevin Smith doesn't mean I'm going to love the movie. I'm very nervous about it, but I'm very hopeful because at least he's taken a huge chance and you don't see that much in cinema anymore.
I do want to see this one, but it's purely out of curiosity at this point because the story does seem super weird, and I can't tell if it's going to be in a good way or a bad way. So just morbid curiosity than actual desire. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See if you can pull it off.
Yeah, I went back and listened to the episode of Smodcast where he brought up the news article that had this idea kind of at its core, and listened to him and his producing partner, Scott Mosier, take the small idea and then really just, you know, as Kevin Smith is wont to do, smoke some pot and take a nugget and roll it into a giant snowball. And it was really funny to listen to him talk about it after having seen the trailer and seeing some of the things he just threw out as maybe little possible moments, and you actually see them in the trailer. So I do like Kevin Smith a lot. He's never really been a huge visual director, like Aaron said. I mean, he's not known for swinging the camera and getting the zoom shots, but I think that he definitely upped his game with Red State, and that the camera actually moved around a little bit.
Mm-hmm,
it wasn't just, you know, stuck nailed to the ground facing one person, you know, one actor's face. He actually moved it and had some dynamic moments. I'm hoping that Tusk will continue to show him evolving as a director. So we'll get to see this the coming weekend. Next up is The Maze Runner. Now, this one is the latest YA novel brought to the big screen, directed by Wes Ball, and it's got a cast of kids that, frankly, I've never heard of, but the top billed ones are Dylan O'Brien, Emil Amin, Hai Kong Lee, Blake Cooper. I really wish I knew who any of these actors were, but I'm sure younger listeners are more familiar. Thomas is deposited in a community of boys after his memory is erased, soon learning they're all trapped in a maze that will require him to join forces with fellow runners for a shot at escape. As our resident YA movie goer, Brian, what are your thoughts on this one?
I'm kind of pumped for this. This looks one of the more interesting YA translations that I've seen going into a first movie. I wasn't too amped about Twilight and even the Hunger Games, but Divergent. But this one has got my attention a lot more than those others. Like I said, going into the first one, some of the other sequels have kind of increased my attention a little bit. But this one, I like the premise of it. Got this huge maze that's obviously very deadly, and I hope a lot of it revolves around that. It's not just a whole lot of build up and stuff before it, and finally the last 20 minutes you see this maze and a few people die and then a few people make it or whatever, something like that. So
not a lot of kids yakking for an hour and 10 minutes.
So, but they, from what I understand, there was, and I avoided the article, but as, I guess there was the ending was leaked or something like that. I don't know. Did you guys hear something about that?
I haven't kept up with it personally.
There was at Comic-Con, the lead actor actually spoiled a major character that died.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
On accident, yeah. I felt really bad for that guy. It was kind of funny, nice. But felt bad for him. Hmm. Why is this one appeal to you? I'm just curious why this one stands out. Because just the maze storyline?
It's the maze, and it doesn't... While there is, I'm sure, a romantic element somewhere in this trailer or the trailers I've seen have not revolved around that. Mm-hmm. They've revolved more along the action and the kind of the mystery of what's in that maze. So that is what appeals to me. How deadly is this maze? How big is this maze? How long do they stay in this maze before you actually get out? So
who built it? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Why are they there? Who's put them there? Why are they, racing their memory? All that stuff. It's just, that appeals to me. That mystery. It's almost like The Cube.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Cube's a great movie.
Exactly what I was thinking.
So kind of that whole mystery aspect of it is what appeals to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the trailer did a really good job of getting you intrigued to see the movie without giving away too much of the mystery. I feel like I have a lot of questions that I can't wait to go see the movie just to get this answered, and I hope I'm not let down.
I'm pretty excited for it, sincerely. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I am.
I'm surprised you guys are. I thought I was going to be alone in that.
No, I like mazes.
Had no idea you were a puzzle guy.
I love puzzles and young boys. Wait, what? Sorry.
We knew that. All right, last one, A Walk Among the Tombstones, written and directed by Scott Frank, stars Liam Neeson, Patrick McDale, Laura Byrne. Yeah, that's about the only names I know. Private investigator Matthew Scudder is hired by a drug kingpin to find out who kidnapped and murdered his wife. That's a pretty succinct summation of the movie. I'll throw this one out there to everybody, but I guess somebody has to start. So, Aaron... We're all kind of Liam Neeson fans, but for some reason I feel like you're more than most. Is this going to be one you're anxious to go into the theater for?
I hope it's something different because I don't want it to be Liam Neeson equals Taken Part 5. You know, I mean, this is kind of why we have the whole typecasting topic this week is poor Liam Neeson. It feels to me like he's getting a little too much into the stoic action hero role. I think there's more to this one. It seems like there's a deeper mystery. It seems more like a drama than an action film. So I'm very curious as to where it's going to go. I think I'm more hopeful than I am confident, if that makes sense. Basically, yeah. I'm not very confident in it because it seems like just another Liam Neeson movie. But the trailer seems like there is more to it. And I haven't read the book. And I don't want to ask anybody because I don't want to be spoiled on it. It's something I'll definitely see, though.
No, this just doesn't appeal. To me too, but this looks like something I'd catch on cable. I'm kind of getting a little bit burned out with the tough Liam Neeson at this point. I hate to say it because I love him as an actor, but these last 5-7 years or so, he's just been, he's almost fallen into Bruce Willis mode, where he's just playing the same guy every single time. And it's just not enough for me to rush out to spend my money on this one. Plain and simple.
I guess I'm alone in feeling like I'm okay with it. Because to me, Liam Neeson is one of those actors that can play the same character, but it still feels fresh to me. Even though it's a different character, obviously, but the different typecast like you're talking about. I could just sit and watch him do his thing.
Were you a fan of his before Taken?
I mean, in Love Actually, I liked him. The movies, the big one, the older one, Schindler's List.
Yeah.
That's probably about...
He's a very good actor, and it feels... I guess if you followed his career and you've been a fan of his for years and years,
mm-hmm.
to me, Taken came out, that was awesome. It finally made him that movie star that he always seemed destined for but never quite reached.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's all he's done since. And before that, he did a lot of really interesting stuff.
I mean, Rob Roy was so good.
It was so good, and it wasn't like just your typical Braveheart wannabe kind of movie. There was a lot more to it, and he did so many diverse roles, and now it's just the same thing over and over. I think that's where you get that from, people that were fans before Taken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I get bummed out. And I know that's where Brian, I think, Brian, you've talked about it before. That's part of your issue, too, is you used to, you know, you liked him in other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's Nell. That was another good one that he was in. He is just a phenomenal actor. And while it's good to see him reinvent himself as an action guy, it's almost like, okay, let's do something a little different, you know? Do a comedy western. Oh, wait.
It's like he's just reduced himself to a archetype, and that's really all he does now.
Yeah.
The aged warrior.
The aged?
Yeah, that's a word.
I know. I just like when you say it. The aged.
Guys, of these four films coming out September 19th, this is where I leave you. Tusk, The Maze Runner, A Walk Among the Tombstones. Which one are you most likely to head out to a theater and check out? Brian?
The Maze Runner.
Scotty?
Maze Runner as well.
Aaron?
Oh, it's so tough. This is like one of the best weekends we've had in a long time for movies I want to see. I'm going to... Probably Tusk, because it looks the most creative.
I will say Tusk as well. So we've got a 2-2 split there.
But I'm going to see all four of them. Somehow.
Yeah, this is where I leave y'all. I will definitely be renting, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's not really... For a lot of people, that's not really a theater movie. I get that. All right, box office. Guardians is once again number one in the galaxy with $10.3 million.
How many weeks is this?
It's like six weeks.
Damn.
It should be over $300 million by the time you hear this episode. Woohoo!
Hey, Iron Man 3 may be coming up at you.
Iron Man 1, not Iron Man 3.
Least earning of the three?
It was. $318 million. Yep. Now, Iron Man 3, it was like $400 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
It should, because it was the best one.
We're just going to ignore Justin. The Ninja Turtles are slowing down with $6.5 million for a $175 million total. Who would have ever thought that movie would make $175 million?
Not even shocked.
Not even Michael Bay thought that. Let's Be Cops cannot be killed with $5.5 million for a $67 million total.
And man, this movie got shit reviews.
It wasn't funny. I bet people seemed to like it. I thought it was stupid.
Let's Be Cops again.
Oh, yeah, you know what's going to happen. Yeah. If I Stay is going away with $5.5 million for a decent $40 million total. The November Man, which I saw recently, and we can officially call it the November Meh, is... held at number five with $4.3 million for a $17 million total. And the identical only...
What the fuck is this movie, please? Because I don't know if I've even heard of the damn thing.
It's like somebody that's impersonating a music... It's a faith-based thing. That's why you haven't heard about it, because you hate the Jeebus.
Oh, yeah.
But it apparently didn't really... people didn't want to see it.
Jesus wasn't rooting for this one?
I guess not. It opened with an absolutely pitiful $1.5 million. It had $833 theater average. It's horrible.
Wow.
Horrible. Horrible, horrible.
Oh, Let's Be Firemen. That'll be the sequel.
Yeah, every show, every movie is there. Must be EMTs.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week, we play ours or a listener-suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And next week, we'll give you a proper whole shout-out. Last week's answer was Scott's, and it's Cool Runnings.
Yeah, man.
I had several people say, I'm going to guess it was that racist snowboarding movie. I don't think it was racist.
Snowboarding movie.
Yeah. Or sledding, whatever the hell it was. Bobsledding.
Bobsledding.
Oh, was it racist?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I'm like, just because there's black people? White people?
Really, because Jamaica actually has a bobsled team.
I know. I think they probably didn't know that. That'd be my guess. They thought it was just Hollywood trying to make a buck off them. Sandra Koki, Occasional G, John D. Robinson, Pablo Meza, Joe Montemurro, Sean McGuire, Steve Peterson, Troy Heinrichs, and John Davenport. Congratulations to all of you. This week it is my turn. If you think you know the clip, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Here it is.
You don't want us to do Light My Fire time for the whole city.
No, I want you to set a fire so goddamn big the gods will notice us again. That's what I'm saying.
I want all of you boys to be able to look me straight in the eye one more time and say, are we having fun or what? Hey, you! Huh? What's your name? Skank! You don't feel that?
I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook.
I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook. Well, boy, your mama must be damn proud of you.
All right, and from there, we're going to go to reviews of new movie and TV releases. We actually have one movie, The Guest. That's the one Justin was alluding to. It comes out September 17th. The Guest stars Dan Stevens as David. Now, if you don't know who Dan Stevens is, you obviously are not a Downton Abbey fan. Because he is, Cousin Matthew, I think, on the show, as he plays. If you've ever seen that show, prepare to be blown away, because it is not the same guy. One day, David shows up at the Peterson home, stating that he's a soldier and the best friend of the Peterson son, Caleb, who died in action in Afghanistan. This comes as kind of a comfort, because he becomes a pseudo-son for the family. He helps mom and dad cope with the loss. He teaches his little brother, Luke, how to deal with bullies. And even becoming that big protective brother that sister Anna had been missing. All that changes when Anna gets a little suspicious about David and contacts the army to find out that David actually died 2 weeks before this. Anything else after this would be a complete spoiler, so I'm going to tell you exactly why I absolutely love this movie. Dan Stevens is a revelation to me. Like I said, if you've seen him in Downton Abbey, you will be shocked to see him, because he becomes an absolute killing machine as the movie progresses. He becomes his own kind of Terminator, I guess. He starts very charming. He's very seductive to Anna a little bit, and also her friends. He's that guy that will do anything for them. He's there for them. He helps them through all this turmoil they're going through, only to snap at a moment's notice. The entire movie hinges on his performance. If he doesn't nail it, the whole movie's blown. I'm serious. I am still shocked. I saw this movie way back in, was it March, and I'm still blown away by his performance. The movie is written by Simon Barrett and directed by Adam Wingard. These are the guys that were behind Your Next. It's a movie I liked, but mostly I really loved the lead female performance in that movie. This time they made a movie that's not a horror movie. It doesn't necessarily pay homage to the 80s. It looks like it was filmed in the 80s. Like, it looks like a John Carpenter movie. Everything from the fashion to the hair to the score just screams like you're in the 80s, even though I'm pretty sure it's modern day. I don't know. If you're an old John Carpenter fan like I am, and I'm a huge John Carpenter fan, there's absolutely nothing you will be disappointed in here. You guys remember, like, Justin, Brian, you guys were fans of the old John Carpenter movies. You know that old synthetic score that he had, that synth music?
Oh, yeah.
It's prominent throughout this movie. And it even has those obscenely loud cues and whatnot. Everything about it, from that music to the absurd and random violence that kept popping up, this is my kind of movie. Overall, The Guest for me is one of the most entertaining times I've had in a theater this entire year. I saw it way back then, and I think I gave it an 8 or 8.5. But it's still with me so much that I actually upped my review. I enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy. Absolutely, without a doubt. It's one of those fist-pumping movies where, like, I'm walking out going, yeah, I want to beat somebody's ass, even though I can't. So if $10 is the full price of admission, The Guest is worth $9.
Whew.
Loved it.
Those are some strong, strong words.
Yep. I loved it. And what about Gotham, Justin?
Well, as everybody knows, Gotham is the new television show on Fox that is going to tell the story of Detective James Gordon, who we all know as Commissioner Gordon in the Batman films, but this television show is going to be about his early years. The pilot's good. It's shot really nicely. Gotham has a great overcast gray feeling, which a city named Gotham should have. They don't overdo it with the Gothic architecture, but there are subtle touches of it here and there. The cast, though, I really found quite intriguing. I've never been a big Ben McKenzie fan. He was in The OC and a few other shows. Never really grabbed me. I think he also did, was it Southland?
Yeah, he was in Southland, yeah.
Just, he's not that kind of actor who would normally grab me, but I thought he did a really good job as Detective James Gordon. It's his first day on the job with Gotham Police as a detective. He was sympathetic, a bit endearing, and all in all, he did a good job of showing how this uncorrupt cop has to deal with the corruption of the city and the police around him. It also starts off with the death of Bruce Wayne's parents. You know, he's a child, and so Detective Gordon is trying to help him by telling him, I'm going to find the people who killed your parents, and then has to, over the episode, deal with that promise and what it means. The only aspect of the film, I keep wanting to call it a film because it looks so good, the TV show that I found a little annoying is that it really, really crammed in as many Batman gallery names and faces as they possibly could. In this episode, it's the pilot, you get Catwoman, you get Ivy, who will go on to become, of course, Poison Ivy, you get Copperpot, you get Edward Nygma. It's just all over the place. I didn't feel like they needed to put all of these characters in there right off the bat. I wish they would have taken a slower time of it. Let these characters kind of come in naturally as opposed to just being put in there. But that said, everybody does a good job. I really liked this pilot episode. For me, the star of it, though, is Jada Pinkett Smith. And that's kind of strange to say because...
Thank you. I was wondering if you were going to agree with me on that. I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, I don't normally find her that strong of a presence on film. But in this one, as she's playing Fish Mooney, who is a lieutenant for Falcone, she does a really good job of playing dangerous and violent, but also charming and a little bit sweet. But more than that, more than anything, she is clever and vicious. I thought she was remarkable, and I can't wait to see where her character goes throughout the show. But all in all, it's a very strong start to what I hope is going to be a strong series. What did you think, Aaron?
I felt the same way. I really thought I hated the name Fish Mooney. It's a horrible, horrible character name. But I really love Jada Pinkett Smith. I thought she did a fantastic job. The aesthetic of the look of the show is really what I think works the best. And I do like that it feels a little procedural, but also serialized. I think they had a nice mix of, you're going to have your crook of the week or whatever, but we're going to have the serialized nature going on in the background. So, you know, those people will really get behind it. I didn't understand the whole, why is Catwoman, 25 years old or whatever she is.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters at ages that in the comic book or the movies, they're not that older or younger than Batman, but
yeah. And I did like Ben McKenzie. I was surprised by him too. He reminds me, and I've said this before, of a younger Russell Crowe in this role.
I could see that.
Yeah. And the only thing I don't like is actually the Bruce Wayne stuff. I actually would like them to just take Bruce Wayne out of the storyline from this point forward.
Yeah, I would too. I think that who killed his parents will probably end up being the mystery that the whole season kind of revolves around. But I do have to say the final scene at the final part of the episode where he has to go back to Bruce and talk to him. I found the kid who played Bruce Wayne to be, I liked his performance in that scene because you could definitely see just around the edges, Batman, just in the anger that he felt at his parents being killed and the killer out there. I could just see it, and I liked it, but I don't want Bruce Wayne in every damn episode.
Exactly. That's what I don't want. I don't want it to be the Bruce Wayne story. I want it to be Gordon.
Exactly. And if I said copper, did I say copper pot?
I think so.
It's Cobblepot. So stop typing your tweets and emails now.
Man, you're just getting more and more like me every day. I like it.
Chester, Cobblepot.
All right, let's go to Blu-ray and VOD releases, Scott.
September 16th, we've got three different movies coming out. First one we've talked about a lot, and that's Godzilla. We talked about this episode back on 143 specifically with reviews, where I gave it a $5.50, Aaron gave it a $7, and Justin gave it a $6.50 out of $10. Also, Think Like a Man 2. Aaron checked this one out on episode 147. The story here, as Aaron told us before, is all the couples are back for a wedding in Las Vegas, but plans for a romantic weekend go awry when their various misadventures get them into some compromising situations that threaten to derail the big event. Aaron liked it enough to give it a $6 out of $10.
It's fun enough. It's a good rental.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, for film anyway, is, theater film, now to Blu-ray and DVD, is Fault in Our Stars. This is the young adult book that has been adapted to film. Aaron talked about it on episode 145, gave it a $7.50. I have to agree with him. I thought it was a very good surprise, and I hope more people check it out. We also have quite a few television series coming to disc finally, and we've got the second season of Arrow, second season of Hannibal, From Dusk Till Dawn's first season, third season of Grimm, and Sleepy Hollow's first season.
I want to interject real quick. The From Dusk Till Dawn season one is actually on Netflix.
It is.
I highly recommend you just watch it there.
Okay.
Instead of paying money for it.
Oh, that
and
bad?
You told me that they're not just vampire monsters. I mean, snake monsters, right?
Yeah, they're vampires. I mean, there's more to it. It's just, it's okay, but it's definitely not worth $20 okay.
Did you watch the whole season? Or?
I watched pretty much. I mean, I watched 6 episodes and they just got to the titty twister. Like they just got to the bar.
The bar.
6 episodes.
Oh, okay. It's been a while since I've seen that movie.
It's the name of the bar.
Okay. We do have one more for video on demand, though, and that is the movie Reclaim, which comes out on September 19th, actually. The story here is a desperate American couple discovers all is not what it seems to be when they uncover a high-stakes underground scam while traveling abroad. To expose the truth and get back to the U.S., they must risk their lives to save their daughter. And that'll about wrap that up. With that, we'll move on to our next segment, where every week we pick one of our four different little games or segments here. And this week it is Stump the Hoe, and Brian has been chosen to stump us as well as those listening. So, Brian, what do you got for us?
All right, well, a little bit later we're going to be talking about typecast actors, and one of the most typecasted actors of all time is Christopher Lee, who just about only plays, if not villains, just Dracula. I think that's, he's always just see him as Dracula or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he has done movies with almost every single James Bond. Which one has he not acted with?
Wow.
Sean Connery, Roger Moore, Pierce Brosnan, or Daniel Craig?
I'll go with Brosnan.
I'll go with Roger Moore.
I am going to go with Daniel Craig.
Wow, in a rare moment, you were all wrong.
Hey!
Yay! Or... Yay. Boo.
Oh, just yay, because none of the other guys are right.
He played with Roger Moore in The Man with the Golden Gun.
Okay.
Pierce Brosnan in Around the World in 80 Days.
Oh, crap. Well, who saw that movie?
Well, it was a 1989 version, so probably four people.
Nobody saw either one.
And he was in The Golden Compass with Daniel Craig in 2007.
Oh, shit.
I knew that
That's
one.
That's right.
I knew that one.
I forgot that film.
Consider Most yourselves stumped.
Nice job, Brian. Round of applause.
Yay.
Now let's go to our topic of the week, and that's typecasting. Okay, it may not be necessarily fair, but a lot of actors are successful in a specific or certain kinds of roles, and then never seem to legitimately be able to have continued success in anything outside the role or genre they're known for. Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker, Arnold Schwarzenegger in action films, Kramer on Seinfeld, Bruce Willis as John McClane, Jim Carrey as the crazy funny guy. We can keep going on and on. Those are just some of the hundreds of actors who at some point in their career found a niche, or for better or worse, found most of their success only there. Why do you guys think that once an actor is largely successful in that one role or that one genre, that audiences just have a hard time buying them in anything else?
Well, I think it's just because of the association. Whether good or bad, it's there. I mean, you know what they say about first impressions, right? I mean, some people can't let go of the first time they saw an actor play something, even if it wasn't that actor's first big role. Whatever you saw first is what always is going to stick in your brain the most. But statistically, the first time most people see an actor is when it is their big first iconic role, because that's what got them there, made them that way. So that kind of just sticks in your head.
Yeah. I mean, if you're kind of new to the acting scene, you're pretty much going to take what you can get. If you get good at playing a villain or a sweet guy or whatever the case is, I mean, that's kind of what that's going to pay my bills for a while. So you do that. And then as the roles come up, casting directors see you as that type of role. They're like, okay, he'd be good or she would be good for this. And then it's just a kind of a crazy cycle. And it just, you know, trickles down to the viewer. The viewer sees them as in those kind of roles. And then that kind of, they say, okay, well, the public likes him, so let's cast him in this movie as this. Or, you know, hey, we'll cast her in this movie. Next thing you know, it's just this vicious cycle of, you know, that's what we expect. And sometimes it works out great for him, like Christopher Lee. But
yeah, he's been around forever.
Other times, not so much. Ask Newman from Seinfeld.
Ooh.
Ouch. Hello.
Somebody had that role in Jurassic Park.
Exactly.
You know, it's interesting that people view typecasting in such a negative light, but we don't do the same thing for, you know, musicians or writers or something. I mean, if you're known primarily for writing a particular genre, that's okay. Nobody asks, why don't you write a romance? And nobody asks Foo Fighters why they don't play more country. They do what they do. They know that they're successful with what they do, and they stick with it. I don't quite know why actors suddenly have to play everything from a king to a pauper to a disabled veteran. I don't think being typecast is necessarily a bad thing, unless you're one of those actors that does seem to chafe at that niche that you've been put into. That's one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of the Star Trek actors, you know, you bring up Shatner, you know, they kind of got typecast as those characters, but it's only because they played them so well for so long that they've been put in that position. And I feel bad if you want to reach out and do other things, but when an actor embraces that typecasting and that niche, I kind of appreciate that, because they seem to not just appreciate the position that they're in, but they appreciate the fans that have kept them there. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, but for those who do, I sorry, but don't be so damn good at doing what you do.
Well, I think your music analogy is interesting, but what, like you said, if they play something different, they actually get railed for it. If you're versatile in your style of music that you play, then, oh, well, I like their older stuff better when they stuck true to their roots and did what they did.
Before they sold out.
Before they sold out. But I think the difference with acting is that what some people consider to be a good actor is someone that is versatile, that has the ability to act and lie to its audience to mm-hmm. be something that they're not. So with that, it's almost a little bit parallel. I think that it shows a better actor when you have the ability to come out of your comfort zone, because if you're playing the same thing over and over again, then you're asking, are they actually acting, or are they just being themselves, or are they just
I could see your point, but if you look at like the actors who have been on these, say, CSI TV shows for mm-hmm. coming up on a decade, their fans love them in that role, and they seem content to stay in that role and keep earning a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are some actors who definitely want to play a wide variety of characters, and good for them. But I also think that there are other actors who see what they do in more of a workman fashion rather than an artist fashion. And they find a role, they're good at it, people like them in it. So they're all right, this is what I'm doing. This is where my acting channel is headed, and they're fine with it.
Yeah. To use your music analogy, they're like the studio musicians.
Right.
I feel bad for people that are pigeonholed, because there are a lot of actors that just want to do something else. You know, they're not in it necessarily just for the paycheck. You know, look at somebody like a Joaquin Phoenix or somebody like, they just want to act. You know, mm-hmm. they're an artist. And I look at somebody like Jim Carrey, and you can tell he's been trying to get out of his niche for years. I mean, he did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He's done other, what was that horror movie that he did?
23.
Yeah, 23. He's done several things where he's trying to branch out, and he did well at them, but they weren't successful, so he couldn't stick to them. He couldn't keep doing them.
And I it is unfortunate, because he was so good in Man on the Moon, mm-hmm. which was more of a drama than a comedy.
It is. And I honestly think some of these actors actually have tried, and for whatever reason, it didn't take. Bruce Willis, I'll use as an example. He was David Addison. That's how everybody knew him. He was typecast as David Addison. Even the first few movies he did were basically, I'm David Addison. Blind Date.
Blind Date.
Totally just David Addison going on a date. That's all it was. Then he did Die Hard, and then he became the action guy forever. And you would see, I think, like in the 90s, you saw him take on parts. You know, like Sixth Sense is the prime example. That's about the only one that was really successful, where he took on parts that were completely separate from anything he had done and got a lot of success with it. And then he would try little bits here and there, and it just seemed like after a while, only people wanted to see him in, all people wanted to see him in were action roles. And then he was just stuck in that genre. And that's all he's been doing for the last decade, sleepwalking through genre movies.
But how much of this do you think might be driven by their lack of desire to take a role because it might not pay enough? I'm sure that a lot of movies 10, 15 years ago would have loved to have had a Bruce Willis in it to play a role that would have challenged him, yet it would have paid scale. And maybe that's why he didn't take it. I think there are some actors that are happy to make their nut on a big studio film and then use that to live on while they do a movie that's for them, that maybe they don't get paid a ton of money for, but it fulfills them artistically. Was he willing to do that? Was that offered? I don't know, but I have to imagine for some actors that would be an issue.
Some actors, I wonder how much of it is paycheck versus adoration. Like, they just don't want to, like, they try to branch out. It didn't work. They jump right back to the thing that they, like, Adam Sandler is a prime example. You know, he's tried to step away a couple times, didn't take, so he jumps right back to what he knows, which is, you know, the typical Adam Sandler role. He ends up going back to it because his fans will see him in that.
It's safe.
Yeah, it's safe. And people still love him in that. And I wonder how much of that is because, you know this, you're an author. Anybody who's a creative person of any kind, you have that need to be appreciated for whatever it is that you're trying to be good at, trying to be successful at. And how many of these people find their niche and they find success in it and they just don't want to leave because they don't want to lose those fans, you know?
I can't knock anybody for that, though. I mean, who the hell wants a real job? I mean, here it is. I've made 3 or 4 movies. They've been huge hits. I've done a couple movies. Now they've bombed. You know, I try to step out a little bit. This didn't work. So you go back to what you do well. And then it's kind of use a sports analogy here. It's you go back to the fundamentals. You know, if you're trying too hard to hit a home run, you're striking out a lot. You go back to what you started doing in the beginning that made you a good ball player. And it's kind of the same thing with that. They step out, they try horror, they try, you know, historical movies, whatever. It doesn't work. So you come back to what you know. And because if you keep doing those movies that nobody is watching, you're not going to be working very long.
That's true. That is true.
I remember listening to Kevin Smith one time, and he was talking about years ago when he was talking to Ben Affleck. I think he was either talking to him about being in Chasing Amy or Jersey Girl, one of the two. And Affleck told him that as soon as he did this studio film and made his money, then he'd be more than happy to do a smaller budget film where he didn't make shit. So some actors are willing to make those sacrifices. Some aren't. I think maybe some of them realize even though they're pigeonholed in what they're doing, there are tens of thousands of actors that are having to work as waiters and waitresses and bartenders that would give a limb to be typecast in a role that's paying them a more than substantial wage. So maybe they go, yeah, I'm just kind of pigeonholed, but you know what? I'm living well and things could be, I could be dead. So let's just find a way to be happy about it instead of being angry. I don't know.
Well, and you all, there are some very well documented cases where people that have tried to break away from typecasting either worked great for them or worked really poorly for them. Josh Hartnett is a prime example. He's somebody that was like the go-to guy for blockbusters for a short period of time. And he willingly said, I'm done. I'm not doing them anymore. I'm only going to do small independent films or things that appeal to me. And he, outside of, you know, recently he's kind of resurfaced with Penny Dreadful, but he kind of faded away, disappeared. Shia LaBeouf, he's trying to break typecasting. So he goes off and does his crazy.
Well, but he's trying to do it by being an asshole.
Yeah, he's doing it the wrong way. Josh Hartnett seemed like he really wanted to be an artist.
Sometimes the best things an actor can do is go away for a little while. Let people forget that you've been force-fed to them for several years. Go away. Let our palates cleanse a little bit. You know, go spend some time in India curing lepers and then come back and rebuild that career again. People love that shit.
Yeah, there's nothing sadder than seeing John Stamos at the mall, you know, still doing signings and stuff like that. That does nobody any good.
Selling gold chains at a Pakistani outlet.
Exactly.
Outlet. I swear, every convention I go to, the guy who played the Green Ranger, he is there selling his pictures and his autographs. He is convention hoard, but you know what? It's paying his bills, so I guess he's okay with it.
And some of that, I'm telling you from, you know, you've been to conventions, we've been to conventions. You see some of these actors who haven't had fame in decades. They go to that because it's the one time they get that adoration that they don't have anymore. You know, they don't get it on the street. They get it when they go to these conventions. So, and they're typecast. They can't get a job doing anything else. They're always going to be whatever, the guy from Battlestar Galactica.
It's the Brett Favre effect. That's why he didn't retire for so
he
long.
He didn't want to lose the applause. Mm-hmm. So let's start with what actor, and obviously I mean male or female, has to you been the most unfairly typecast? As in, their other roles have been great, but unfortunately, audiences just don't watch them in anything else because they can't move past the past.
All right. I'm going with Hugh Grant. He's that bumbling, sweet Brit that's got this likable, awkward charm. And, I mean, of course, enlisting the services of tranny hookers aside, I mean, he's, you know, he's made a few movies that were not sweet rom-coms, and nobody went to see them. American Dreams, Cloud Atlas, Extreme Measures. I mean, he's tried to step out, and nobody, I think he is only seen as that guy from Notting Hill or Four Weddings and a Funeral or Three Weddings. What is it? Four Weddings and
Four Weddings. The sequel is going to be five.
I should know that. I watched it probably 100 times. But, you know, he's even been so out of, I guess, out of our conscious that he even made a movie called I'm Still Here. And he played it himself. And that was 4 years ago. So
he's still there. He's still there.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I'm going to pick somebody that give me a minute to explain before you jump down. He's like, hey, he's really, really popular. Kevin Spacey. He's an actor, and he's one of those actors. And I want to remind you the question. The question is, you know, how many actors are unfairly typecast? Kevin Spacey seems to only have success playing snakes. He has to play a lecherous or duplicitous character. That's all he plays. Seven, Usual Suspects, American Beauty, House of Cards.
Swimming with Sharks.
The movies he branches out and tries to play a warmer, more sympathetic character, like even K-Pax, they're just not as successful. He seems locked in that box of just slimy
What's in the
guys.
Box?
Exactly. Hey.
Sorry.
He's locked in that exact box. And he just, for whatever reason, can't seem to climb out. I mean, he's great at it. I mean, he plays a bastard better than anybody in Hollywood, in my opinion. But that's not all the guy can do. He is so talented, but he just doesn't get success in those other roles. I feel like he's always stuck in that box. Justin?
You know, I'm probably going to get hate for my pick. But Michael Cera is one of those guys that has just gotten this shtick that he is the awkward. Well, for a while, he was an awkward teen. Now he's an awkward 20-year-old. Yeah, 45-year-old. But he always plays the sweet, innocent character. But yet when he was on This Is the End and he got to play just a really perverted, twisted version of himself, I thought he was extremely funny and charming doing it. I would like to see him have him be presented with different sorts of roles, to do something that's dramatic. Don't stick with the comedy. I'd like to see him be able to branch out, because I think he's a genuinely talented guy, but he's just had so many of those same types of roles brought to him. He needs to do more. And I think Scott Pilgrim was a good start. I just wish it would continue on.
I agree with you. I actually toyed with having him for my pick, but I wound up with one that we already talked about, and that's Jim Carrey. It's an easy pick, I know, but
a valid one.
He's forever Ace Ventura in everybody's mind.
Alrighty then.
But, man, The Truman Show, which was one movie we didn't mention, was at the top of my list for a long time.
It's a great movie.
I have seen that movie so many times. And, I mean, there's a scene at the end on the boat where I to this day, I watch it and I still get these emotional pangs just from the look of him banging on that wall and just so frustrated. And he's so good. I mean, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, same thing. I mean, what was the one about the theater? The Majestic.
The Majestic, yeah.
He can act. He really can. But, like, you know, and that's a bad thing. But those really quirky, goofy comedies are what made a lot of money. But
I mean, he even stooped to making a penguin movie. I mean,
Mr. Popper's Penguins?
Yes. Oh, Lord. Like Jim Carrey, he used to be so funny. I'd rather see Ace Ventura 3 than that crap.
How about Yes Man, more recently? He was great in that. Yes, it was funny, but the heart...
I honestly never saw it.
It's better than you think. I'm not going to call it a fantastic movie, but it's worth a watch. It's not all goofy. It's got a lot of heart to it, so...
I will try to check it out. Now, those are good actors. What about those actors who have absolutely, deservedly been typecast in a kind of role, as you really have never seen anything from them to indicate they should be doing anything else? Justin, come on, you know you got something.
The one actor or actress that really deserves the pigeonholing that they've gotten, for me, is Helena Bonham Carter. Early on, she had some real potential. And then she got together with Tim Burton. And because he is her husband, you know it was her decision to be in every fucking one of his movies, basically playing the same quirky, eccentric, wig-wearing female. And that's all she seems to be able to play now. Every movie she's in, she's wearing a wig, and she's eccentric, and probably violent.
Yeah, I loved her in Sweeney Todd.
Where is the Fight Club version of Helena Bonham Carter? You know, the Hamlet version. We're not getting that. All we're getting is this endless parade of wigs. And it is so tiring. And it's entirely of her choosing.
That's a good call. I wouldn't have even thought of it. That's a good point. Now I'm angry. Fired up. Fired up.
Damn it, he had a good one.
Scott?
Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh, God, that's perfect. Yeah.
I mean, she plays the exact... I mean, I like her.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah, you know, but she's the same character in every movie.
She just has the same look in every movie.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't even change her scowl.
Yep, it's just this scowl, angry, pissed off woman that...
can beat everybody's ass.
Yes.
Yeah. There's really nothing more to say.
Really
not. Nailed it. Brian?
All right, well, I won't dwell too much on this because you actually covered it. Covered a lot of ground with it a little while ago, but Bruce Willis, he started out as a really kind of almost a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, once he got cast as John McClane, that's all he's done ever since. You know, he's done good, you know, Hudson Hawk, Last Man Standing, We're Good and all that kind of stuff. But like G.I. Joe, The Expendables, Red, even in the comedy, The Whole Nine Yards, he's still the same guy.
He's been playing him for a while, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just, honestly, I'm just tired of him. I want to like him so much more, but I'm just tired of him. Just, God, please, do something else.
It's really sad. I have to agree with you, too, because I was the biggest Bruce Willis fan for, like I've talked about before, 10, 15 years. He was my favorite actor. I just loved everything he did. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, he just decided to stop trying and be the same guy in everything.
And I think that's the key part of that. It's just, it doesn't even feel like he's trying. Like with the whole reason why he wasn't in Expendables 3, he tried stiff arming for $100 million for 2 seconds worth of scenes. And I know that's exaggeration, but
quite a bit.
But even still, it was what? 3 million, 4 million, 5 million for
3 days worth of work. And he wanted $1 million a day. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Kevin Smith could tell us a lot of stories, but you know who almost ended up in the Jim Carrey kind of position, but because he played it smarter and took better roles, didn't? Is Tom Hanks. Early on, he was really nothing but a comedic actor.
That's absolutely true.
But then he picked some proper roles, broadened himself out, and now look, I mean, the guy can do fucking anything. I wish Jim Carrey would have learned that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think really smart actors have found a way to do it. Denzel Washington, he was like Mr. Drama for the longest time. Now people see him as a badass. If you would have told me 20 years ago I would see Denzel Washington as a badass, I'd be shocked and I'd tell you you're an idiot. That's the St. Elsewhere guy.
Back to St. Elsewhere, doctor.
Yeah, you don't belong kicking anybody's ass. My pick, and it's going to sound, it's really easy. Look, I didn't even have to think that hard, is Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's the easiest pick I could ever possibly think of. Arnold has absolutely zero range. Zero. He's been in Kindergarten Cop. He's been in Twins. And all he can do is stand there and flex. That's it.
It's not a tumor.
I mean, even in his comedies, he's the exact same freaking guy in every freaking movie.
Jingle he's so way. Good at it.
Jingle All the Way.
Hey, I'm not arguing that he is not good at what he does. All these people are good at what they do. Even Bruce Willis has his moments, not in the last few years, but before that he did. But Schwarzenegger, I mean, he's tried to do movies. I mean, even Total Recall, he tried to have some emotion. That just looked funny.
Get your ass to Mars!
Kindergarten Cop, he tried to be funny. He's not funny. I mean, everybody around him was funny. The kids were funny. They made him look better.
Twins.
Danny DeVito made him funny.
True Lies, he was really funny.
Yeah.
Tom Arnold made him funny. I'm telling you, if you go back and watch his movies, Schwarzenegger is not a man of impeccable timing. He has no comedic timing. There's no emotion on his face. His wife could be shot in front of him, and all he says is, I got to kill everyone. You know, that's it. That's the range. I like him. Everybody likes Schwarzenegger to a degree, except, you know, the maid. But he is just the guy that's the same guy all the time.
Has he ever tried to be anything different, though? I mean, aside from trying to add some laughs to his roles, he's always just seems to have taken nothing but action movies. I think that's really all he really wants to do.
Collateral Damage, if you ever saw that.
Oh, yeah. That was like right around 9/11, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he tried to make a thriller. You know, they sold it as an action, but there's like no action. He's a fireman and everything. Let's be fireman. There you go. And in that one, he tried to show some dramatic range. It's just not there. If it's there, I haven't seen it. His whole career has been charisma.
One of his best movies is one of his earliest, and that's Conan. And that's because he was entirely him. Big and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say very, very quiet.
Yeah, when he doesn't talk, he's great. He's got presence.
Let your biceps speak for you.
I will never forget in Jingle All the Way, he was supposed to get that Turbo Man doll for his kid. And hearing him try to pronounce the word Turbo was awesome. Turbo.
They should have named it something else just to make it easier on him. So lastly, which actor do you most wish would broaden their roles before that is all they are known for? Which actors do you want to save?
My pick was a super easy one. It's Will Ferrell. As much as I like his comedies,
it's a good pick.
He can act. And I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Stranger Than Fiction.
Yes.
He was awesome in that movie. And I have a hard time thinking of another one like that, where he play. I mean, he had some humor in that role, but he was a straight-laced guy, and he was so good. Mm-hmm. Such an underrated movie, and I wish more people would see that one. I wish he would try more of those, but he's got such a niche built out for himself. And don't get me wrong, I love Step Brothers, and I love Anchorman and all that, but...
They're all the same guy, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
Bumbling idiot.
So
if he tries to get out of that niche, I'm going to kick his ass back into it, because he is so good at it.
He is, but it's almost too much. I mean, just everything is that.
And yeah.
Like, I did not like Ricky Bobby. I was not a fan of the...
Shake it, bake!
I was not a fan of the...
Shake it, bake!
The ice dancing one. I can't remember what that was called. Blades of Glory.
I actually like Blades of Glory.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it John Heater?
Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah.
But
that was all right. And Brian?
I'm going with Mark Strong.
Oh.
He's, anytime you see him in a movie, he's a bad guy. You know, there's no mystery at all. I mean, if you watch, you don't even have to watch a whole lot of movies. But anytime he's just that guy that you see, you're like, oh, yeah, he's the bad guy. The only movie I can remember seeing him in, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but there's so many other people in there, it could be anybody else, so I don't care. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, or Spy. Where he's not the bad guy in that. And he's a quality actor. He's got good skills. I honestly don't know. Maybe there's a role for him in maybe a Marvel or DC movie that you could squeeze him in, make him a hero or something.
He played Sinestro in Green Lantern.
Yeah. And he ended up
being the bad guy at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it's... Yeah, I guess so. Forgot about that. I blocked that movie out of my
banks
too. So.
I'm gonna.
But he actually did good in that role. I mean, it's for the most part of the movie, a good guy. He was actually good in that role. I just want to see more from him, and I think he's a fantastic actor. And I just hope he gets out of that bad guy mode for a while.
We've talked about it numerous times, but Melissa McCarthy, I know that's somewhat easy, but she's the one person who I love her comedy. I think she's a very gifted comedian, but I've seen so many touches of what she could be as a dramatic actress. And I really want her to grasp that and go for it. I know there's a movie with Bill Murray called St. Vincent coming out that it looks like she's finally broadening herself a little bit, but I need to see it soon because she's... Not necessarily for me, because I still like her, but a lot of people I know, the backlash is starting to build. And if she doesn't start broadening her repertoire a little bit, she's going to be stuck there.
I mentioned mine earlier, but it's Chris Pine. He's a great Captain Kirk, and I think he makes a great action hero. He could be a good Jack Ryan. I thought he was adequate in Shadow Operative. Is that what it was called?
Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. Horrible title. Yep.
Yeah, terrible title. But he was okay in that too. But I could see him keep taking those sorts of roles. I mean, even in the comedy he was in with, Legally Blonde chick, Tom Hardy.
This is War.
This is War. It was still an action kind of character. I hope that he will begin to take more comedic roles, more dramatic roles that don't involve gunplay or shooting. I think he's a quality actor, but he could so easily fall into a niche of action movie guy, and that's all he'll stay in. I'd like to see him do more.
All right. Now, what have we got? What do our listeners have, guys? And I'm going to read one tweet while you're bringing up the listeners' picks. PS Gamer said Jesse Eisenberg as Jesse Eisenberg. and Chris Pratt as the lovable goof.
There you go. Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Now that's, I don't know if it's too soon to be saying he's typecast, I would think, but I get what you're saying because that's what he's been doing for several years on Parks and Rec and that sort of thing.
He was a little goofbally in Guardians, but I think this was definitely a step in the right direction of changing up his persona.
Yeah. A little goofy.
Well, still, he also got to kick ass and be a
hero.
Yeah, you know, be a cool hero.
Mm-hmm. So what do our listeners say?
Robert John Davenport says Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man, Tony Stark. whenever I see him in anything else, that's all I see now.
Yeah.
True story. Just rewatched U.S. Marshals, where he played the villain in 1998. Spoiler alert, dude! and I'll be damned if Iron Man wasn't holding a gun at the back of Blade's head.
Oh, that's funny.
DC Marvel crossover right there, isn't it?
No, they're both Marvel.
Well, no, they're both Marvel.
My bad.
Scott?
Michael, is it Bonovich? Says most of the
You're
kids.
You're asking us?
Yeah, we don't know.
I was asking Aaron. That was a mistake.
Don't ever ask me how a name is pronounced ever.
Anyway, Michael says most of the kids from the Harry Potter series, even seeing Radcliffe's in upcoming Horns, makes me wonder what curse Voldemort used on him. That's really a good point.
Emma Watson has managed to avoid that.
She's done a good job, yeah. She has.
Michael Pippett says T.J. Miller from She's Out of My League to his character in How to Train a Dragon movies and animated series. He always plays the slightly intellectually challenged stoner smart mouth, and he does it brilliantly.
It's a good call.
Scott Kilgaro says Orlando Bloom. Based on the box office take from Elizabethtown, he ain't swinging a sword nobody wants to watch. And I got to tell you, I thought Elizabethtown is a rare clunker from Cameron Crowe, but I did not like that movie.
Like he only does period pieces. Besides,
I don't think he's a leading man. He can't hold the screen as a leading man.
Yeah,
I don't believe he can.
Douglas Clayton says Melissa McCarthy, heavy, funny lady. Jessica Rabbit, buxom cartoon nightclub singer.
Jessica Rabbit ain't real, Douglas, just so you know.
I think we all wish she was.
Yeah, kind of.
Bill Paxton is Hudson from Aliens.
That's kind of true.
Game over, man. Game over. Chewbacca, large furry sidekick. Man, I'm tired.
Oh. Brian.
Lytton Bowers says Morgan Freeman as the magical Negro.
we don't write it. We just read it.
Always be the Wolverine. God,
we don't
Thanks,
write
Lytton.
It.
I'm getting a shit ton of email for that one.
Amy Salton North says Michael J. Fox will always be Marty McFly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
not for
true.
Much longer.
Oh.
Oh. Wow. Shut up.
I'm sorry. What? I'm not wishing he was dead?
Son of a bitch.
Just saying.
God, you're evil.
No, you're just not wishing, but you are rushing things a little bit.
I actually, for some reason, I more see him as Michael, the character he had
Alex
on,
P. Keaton?
Yeah, Alex P. Keaton, for some reason, than Marty McFly.
Really?
Me too.
That was what I first saw him as, and that's kind of what stuck.
Oh, going to Scott's point. Scott?
Josh Dima says, Johnny Depp always seems to be the go-to guy for an eccentric character buried in makeup.
God, that's true.
Now, wait a minute. Yep. To be eccentric, you have to have money, right, by definition? Eccentric is not a synonym for crazy. It's rich and crazy. Yes?
I don't know. I don't know what the legal restrictions are.
Yeah, I think
if
you're rich, you're eccentric. If you're poor, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. Cade Eastham says, Adam Sandler recently always seems to be a dumb rich guy with a hot wife. Well, when you make the movies, you get to make those kind of calls. I can't knock him for that. I'll knock him for a lot of things, but that ain't one of them.
Robert Noble, Morgan Freeman for the last couple decades has been the go-to guy for the role of a wizened, benevolent character. If you need someone in the movie to guide your protagonist, give them advice, narrate for the audience, or just plain be God, then he's your guy.
That's good call. David McGrath, who, by the way, I love his Facebook profile picture.
Because he just looks so cool.
He just does.
Dapper.
He pulls off that
He's like,
suspenders.
What's, his picture says, what's up?
Yeah, pretty much. Anyway, he says, Kevin Costner, no matter what role he chooses, I just can't shake that image of the quintessential American. Whether it's action, drama, Western, or whatever, he is that same guy. Heroic, stoic, calm, soft-spoken, caring.
Aw. It's like there's a flag waving behind him, even if there's not.
Yeah.
God, I got to stand up and salute. Steve Peterson says, aside from the obvious cast of The Expendables, Melissa McCarthy is probably topping the list right now, always playing the ugly, frumpy, trashy, vulgar idiot. On the male side, you have Seth Rogen, who always plays the lovable, nerdy, stoner doofus. Hugh Jackman will always be Wolverine, and Elijah Wood will always be Frodo.
I thought that until I started watching, what's the name of the show?
Wilfred.
Oh, Wilfred. Oh, my God. That is such a departure from Frodo. it's almost like I forget it's Elijah Wood.
I'll do you one better. Go watch Maniac.
Yeah, I've heard he's good in that.
Yeah, he's really good in Maniac. It's on Netflix, yeah. So you can watch it.
People, check out some of these other roles. They might loosen up for you.
Any other? Are we good?
Oh, Craig Schermerhorn says Mila Jovovich and John C. McGinley. He played the Doctor and Dr. Cox in Scrubs. From Scrubs to Get Carter to Article 99 to The Rock, he's a sardonic, quiet, but fast-talking, overly histrionic smartass with a quip and a hand gesture for every situation, and he's a master at it.
Yep, that's what he does.
Sean McGuire says simply Melissa McCarthy.
She seems to be the winner.
Yeah, I'd say.
Marcus Shelton says, Arlie Ermey is the purest version of typecasting that I have ever seen. He has basically been playing the same character for 3 decades. Also, Terry Crews come to mind as the funny, outlandishly muscle-bound black guy.
He can play that as much as he wants, as far as I'm concerned. I love him.
I find that.
Just stop doing those commercials for
Old Spice.
Keep doing them.
I'm so tired of them.
Shut up. You keep doing it.
Have you seen the one where he plays the instruments using his muscles that are connected?
So fantastic.
Flame sax! What? Makes me laugh.
And it's funny, if you hear him in an interview, he is actually doesn't sound anything like any of his characters. He seems like a very down-to-earth, easygoing, smart. You know, he doesn't sound like, I'm just, roids! You know,
he seems very humble.
Very humble. Very very happy to be where he is. Mm-hmm. So, love that guy. Remember to like us on Facebook. We do have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group for movie and TV fans. So if you're not... You don't have to just be a fan of the show. It's for anybody that likes to talk about movies or TV shows. So feel free to hop over there and join up. The link is in the show notes. And I know I've talked about the last couple of weeks and haven't had them. I've got them ready this time. If you review us on iTunes, we'll read your review on the show. First one is Mr. Clever says it's a different look at movies and television. Good content. They've turned me onto some cool things I wasn't aware of. If you're a fan of movies and television, definitely check them out. Thank you, Mr. Clever. Taylor White says, who doesn't like hearing all the latest news, juicy gossip, and what's going on in Hollywood? Solo Thea says, thank you for a great show. I'm liking the new format. Well, I'm glad you like it. I feel like I'm sitting in the living room shooting the shit with y'all. Thank you for also doing a Robin Williams tribute. It's amazing how many people he touched. Jedi Tank, skywalking through Neverland. This Isn't Overkill says, great sounding, great fun, great chemistry with the hosts, and one of the few podcasts that you can actually hear all three hosts without them sounding like they're in a wind tunnel. I'm assuming they don't hear you, Scott.
Wow.
Just kidding.
Awesome.
Now let's go to emails. Justin, why don't you tell us what you got this week?
Acacio G. Messing his name up as I read him. Rail on me. He says, cool runnings. That was actually easy. On another note, Justin can't pronounce black women's names. So I wish he would have provided them a pronunciation guide.
Taraji and Layla.
There you go. And then I got another dose and a crap from the color commentary on Twitter. They say, so, Hollywood Outsider, butchered the real, what is it?
Taraji.
There you go. Name, and didn't mention her acting ability in discussing No Good Deed movie. I'm sorry.
She's a wonderful actress. We talked about it when we talked about the trailer a few weeks ago.
Oh, don't start kissing ass now.
No, in fact, last night.
Don't let them bully you into saying compliments. Come on.
The other night I was watching Hustle and Flow, and Taraji is fantastic in that film. She makes that movie. I apologize.
Were you looking for something to reference?
No, I was just going through my movies. I was like, oh, Hustle and Flow.
Oh, I just happened to be on IMDb and saw.
Shut your face.
How did you pronounce it? I don't remember.
Taraji.
I don't know.
It's Taraji P. Henson. And she is a wonderful actress. And I can actually, I've got audio. Go back and listen when we talked about the trailer. I did say she was a wonderful actress. So, and I'm looking forward to it because of her. But unfortunately, she's in a movie with Idris Elba. And Idris Elba blows everybody else away. That's just who he is. And continuing the Brian and Justin are wrong week. Brian, you got an email.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. I'm absolutely positive you have an email.
I don't know. On my copy, somehow it's just blank. It just says Scott. Anyway, Scott Calgaro says, "Hey hoes, I just finished episode 155. Always love your Ho Awards. There was one glaring error, however, that I think needs to be rectified on air, if only because it had me yelling at my radio. Aaron was, and I can't believe I'm writing this, correct, and Justin and Brian were wrong." Yeah, there's nothing else really worried about this. So we
no, you should probably finish that off. You should finish
all right.
That.
So he says, continues with, the group kicking ass in the hallway scene came towards the end of the movie on Ronan's ship and not as part of the prison break. Not sure if this was rectified off air, but I figured I'd publicly jump to Aaron's defense, even if he needs it, even he needs it once in a while. Otherwise, it was an awesome show. Keep the magic coming. Rock on, hoes.
Scott, yeah. If you heard the things Aaron said about you behind your back, you would not be defending him.
Nice try. Exactly. Nice try. Nice try. I do want to say, Scott, thank you for that, because neither one of these dipshits are willing to publicly offer up that, all right, we got it wrong.
I said last week you were right.
You said off air.
Oh, well, just because you're not recording, don't make it my fault.
Neither one of you want to be publicly humiliated, so I'm glad someone else...
I wonder why that is.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
I got one more from a new listener here. I'm freestyling here.
Okay.
Keeping you on track. Anyway, her name's Mandy Sarber. She says, "My youngest just came home from school, and he wants me to tell you what he did today. They heard the end of the podcast I was listening to when he heard the Remember to Buy Popcorn." Can't believe she lets him listen to it. He was ecstatic because that's the treat he took to school to celebrate his birthday. Movie theater popcorn from a local theater.
Aww. That's really cool.
Hey, what do you know? Did it say what his name is?
Nope.
Okay. Well, hey, little guy, if you're listening, good for you. I'm proud of you. You're the man. Scott?
All right.
I'm sure Scott wishes he would have heard that when he was a kid.
This email's epic, and I've been really excited to read it. This comes from Benjamin Abel, SPP. What does SPP stand for? Do we know?
I don't know. Scott.
You're down with SPP.
Yeah, you know me.
Anyway, Benjamin says, "I can't believe you guys. How dare you? Are you aware dolphins rape approximately 14 people per year in the United States? And don't even get me started on the modified handguns the Ukrainian government taught dolphins to fire. You know? The group of dolphins that escape back in the ocean? There are goddamn mercenary dolphins cruising through the sea, and Aaron is promoting the sequel of a movie about a cyborg dolphin? Ugh. It's a Skynet of the sea, guys. Seriously." Thank you, Benjamin. That was awesome.
I don't even know what to say. But kudos to you, sir. Kudos to you. Can't wait. I hope Dolphin Tale 2 was fantastic. I got so many messages saying, good job not letting him stick it to the Dolphin Tale movie. Swear to God. People like dolphins.
I like dolphins too, just not obviously. The actors that were in this fucking movie.
Obviously, not very much. Mike says, "Your most recent podcast, you guys didn't know who Black Adam was. I'm not the biggest DC comic geek, but know enough about Shazam to know Black Adam. Long story short, Adam had powers of Shazam, used them for evil, and got exiled. He's pretty much the Joker to Batman or Zod to Superman, his evil equal and reoccurring nemesis. If you want some nerd homework, Superman/Shazam, The Return of Black Adam was on Netflix instant last I saw. Very short animated movie that's not bad. I actually looked it up. It's not on Netflix, but I did find it. It's really good. Now I kind of have a better idea of Shazam and Black Adam. As for me, I'm a fairly new listener and love the show. Thanks for the entertainment and can't wait to hear more. Mike." I appreciate you filling us in on who Black Adam was. We really didn't know. We should have known.
Yeah, no, we didn't know.
But we didn't know.
It looked like Bizarro.
We barely knew who Shazam was, much less Black Adam.
Exactly. Where you can find us, stay through the credits for outtakes. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com or tweet us on @H_outsider. Facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Email us feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app or through our RSS feed. That's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Thanks to Justin, Brian, and Scott for being here.
Holla.
And remember, guys, wow, the next time you go to a theater. Oh, I'm also on the new Blacklist podcast that I said I was going to be doing is out. So you can find the link at The Hollywood Outsider. It's on there, too. And Justin's book is also available on the website. Never want to forget promoting that.
Oh, and hey, I actually have easier access to my email address. So if you want to email me, scott@thehollywoodoutsider.com, I will actually answer it this time, I promise.
Yeah, so it's people that have emailed you before and hadn't heard any.
Says a guy whose email's been sitting there since 2011.
All right, guys, remember the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. Is it something where they gave something a 9.5 just because somebody was popular?
It's deeper than that. It's not. It's
That's
not
what she said.
Don't mind if I do. Hold on while I whip this out.
I believe it was excuse me while I whip this out.
Oh, wow.
Man, you are an asshole.
Talk about Taraji or whatever.
Oh, God. We got called out by, like, the black community or something.
It's a big deal.
I did get an email from Jesse Jackson, so.
But is it okay for me to say Negro? What are the rules on this?
Negro isn't a dirty word.
It is if you say magic.
I tell you
Negro.
What, why don't you go down to some black guys, say, how are my Negroes doing? Let me know how that works out for you.
There's a good docu-movie about NXS. And so I don't know if any of you guys are NXS fans, but...
Huge NXS fan.
Is it called Choke Me, I Love You?